half a second on him, half a second in the first sector.
Bro, you cannot overtake Damon, okay? That is team order. You cannot overtake Damon.
Now come on, close him down and kill him.
Fernando is faster than you.
You heard me before, didn't you, Ralph, about overtaking Damon? You heard that, didn't you?
That's
literally
how loud I know.
Get that, Ralph? Did you hear me?
Fantastic, guys. Not bad for another two driver. Cheers.
When are you
going
to call me in, man?
Kevin, get out of the way.
Ralph, acknowledge.
All right, everybody. Once again, this is Paul Charles Lee with the FBC Track Talk. Sorry for the delay, but I've been out and about, travelling around the country to different tracks myself. Unfortunately, not to Austin. Very much like to be there. Kind of sad, but we will move on and we'll sit behind the big screen and watch it with the rest of you folks. So let's take a look at Austin, shall we? First Grand Prix was in 2012. The lap count is 56. The track is 5.51 kilometers long. So therefore, you add that all up. Hold on. Yep. 308.72 kilometers is the race distance. Unless there is something untoward happen, which we don't expect. The lap record was set back in 2012, oddly enough. 139.35 by Sebastian Vettel. His qualifying record that year actually was 135.6. The fast lap done by Rosberg last year was a 40.66. So fairly close to the lap record pace. So we fully expect that that will be knocked off this year with the improvements to the cars and with the stickier rubber. Due to the rainfall from certainly from last year, tracks got a little bumpier. Perhaps the teams are going to have to set their cars up just a little bit higher. Sometimes that does happen where you have to actually compromise the setup for a whole lap just so that you can actually make the car across a bump that just can't be avoided. Lewis Hamilton has had massive success here in Austin. He's won three out of the four races that were held, so I'm sure he's in a big mood to go and knock that into a four out of five this weekend. I'm sure he really needs it, and so hopefully he can remain his focus after his various appearances on various talk shows in the US, including Ellen DeGeneres, which I haven't seen yet, but I'm sure it's enthralling. Okay, so moving on, let's look back to 2015. We were talking about the rain from last year. It was rain. Crazy race, horrible race for the fans, the teams. They finally did get the race underway, but they actually had to have the qualifying happen on Sunday morning. Also, this is the place where Lewis threw the hat at Nico and Nico threw the hat back. Maybe that was a turning point for Nico, because certainly his approach to life this year has changed us a little bit to the better, it seems, when you look at the point standings. Also, if you remember back at the start, Nico actually had the pole, but Hamilton got inside Nico into turn one and pushed him out just past the curb there, which we've seen a few times before. Nico was none too happy about that, that's for sure, nor would I. Red Bull was on the pace during this race. Ricciardo actually took the lead from Hamilton going into the S's. They were pretty handy out there in the changeable conditions. But ultimately, it was the two Mercedes cars at the front. Lap 49, Rosberg was in the lead. Hamilton was chasing him down, and Rosberg just kind of overshot a turn, and Hamilton just kind of cruised on the inside to victory and the World Drivers' Championship. But apart from that, obviously, the thing that everyone's just waiting for me to talk about was the biggest controversy of that weekend was Ericsson and Nasser hitting each other on the exit of Turn 1, the Sauber twins starting off their bitter feud that has not let up since. So the weather for this weekend looks like there's not much chance of rain, about 80 degrees Fahrenheit for the week, so it should be perfect conditions for the fans and for the drivers. The Pirelli tires that they're bringing are a medium softs and super softs. Usually there's most teams are kind of following the same path, but this weekend's gone quite a bit different. Ferrari have just got one set of mediums, while Red Bull have gone for four. So quite a big disparity there. Most teams have leaned towards the super softs as their higher percentage of tire allocation than, of course, the softs and the mediums. Let's take a look at the Brembo fun facts. 11 braking zones at COTA, three very big ones, turn 1, turn 11, and turn 12. 17% of the lap is spent braking, 59% is on full throttle, so the rest of it, I'm guessing, is just coasting. Or, you know, these guys need to get on with it, that's for sure. It's not all brake or all throttle, isn't it? That's what I thought. Anyway, medium difficulty, therefore, on the Brembo scale, 5 out of 10. The biggest braking zone on the track is turn 12, as you'd expect, coming all the way from 337 kilometers an hour all the way down to 78 kilometers. Massive, massive difference. 127 meters that takes, or 417 feet. And it all happens in 1.35 seconds and under 5.7 Gs. And when you think about people going out there and just having to subject themselves to that kind of G-force, let alone also being delicate enough with their brake release, their turn-in points, etc., to go and do that. It's quite a feat for these guys to do this lap after lap, that's for sure. That distance, 177 meters by Brembo facts, is the same as the distance between the two curves at Longhorn Stadium. But myself, never been to Longhorn Stadium, probably never will. That means absolutely nothing. So let's put it in perspective here, shall we? It's the equal to 624 carbon-fit Stetson hats laid end-to-end. So that should give you maybe a better clarity of what that really means. The energy dissipated during the race, 133 kilowatts an hour, equal to the hourly consumption of 133 rodeo bulls. Well, if you make this map at home, hold on, counting again. One bull equals 1 kilowatt an hour. So stunning, stunning mathematics right there on the fly. One driver during the entirety of the race will actually extend 78 tons of pressure on the brake pedal over that race, which is the same as all the bullshits, pardon my French, measured at all the presidential debates combined. Or maybe just each individual debate, I'm not sure. But either way, very, very calculated and accurate measurements there for sure. So there's the facts. That's what we're looking at coming into the race. So why don't we take a look at the track? All right. So looking at the track, we're going into turn one, coming all the way from 322 kilometers per hour all the way down to 17. We see that a couple more times in the lap, but obviously this is a little bit different as you're charging up that hill. The tight hairpin at the top has a massive entry width initially, but it closes down so quickly, but it sucks even the best of drivers into thinking there's actually a chance to get your car in between there, even though you see the gap are closing very quickly. The pedal release is crucial in zone three, which is kind of where we would call the end point of a braking zone, where you're just coming off the brake pedal, as the road also is flattening out at the same time. So not only are you losing some of the grip from the hill, but also you're losing aerodynamic grip at the same time. So your pedal release has to be probably a bit quicker than you're used to. So you've got to really get that right. Once you've got the car slowed down, you really want to get that pivot in the middle of the corner to turn the car on the release of the brake to help get the car straightened early and get on the power down to turn two. If you don't, you find yourself with that steering input for a very, very long time and having to wait for that throttle to be allowable to even get any down. So as I said, you really want to get the chassis to get the car turned in, brake release, and just kind of get that chassis to work itself into a pivoting motion to help you get pointed and head down to turn two. All right, so turn two is a flat out right hander when everything is going well. Occasionally on full fuel or dodgy tires, you may have to lift just a little bit to get the car to stay in line. But for the most part, on a hot lap, definitely going to be taking that flat. How you approach it depends on how your car handles and whether you want to free the car up early on the exit or decide how wide to the left you want to go on that entry point. So if you're at Coda or watch it on the TV, you might see some very differing turning point lines from there. And I say it really depends on what that driver's evaluated as to how his car, if his car can stay online, if he turns in a little early, and not have to use any more real estate than he wants to. All right, so you come out of turn two and now you are heading into the S's. Turn three is the first part of the S's, but it's not something you have to slow down for. When you come out of two, obviously you're not trying to scrub speed, but you do have to get the car back over to the right, because when you approach turn three, you really want to kind of get a straight trajectory. You want to be actually turning into the corner at that point. You actually get the car pointed before you get to turn three, so it's actually just a straight point. It actually effectively becomes the turn-in point for turn four if you can do it right. So if you get a little bit wrong and your car's kind of turned in just a little bit as you're doing that, and you feel like you may have to brake, that's going to kind of pitch your car into the wall. So the thing is, get the car pointed, turned early. So basically you're just driving past that apex for turn three. Then you're coming into the second part of the S, just turn four. It's fast entry, and you carry the speed in as far as you can, possibly flat if you're doing really good on a flyer in a good car, but perhaps maybe just a slight breathe of the throttle pedal, but not much at all. After that, you do have to come to a slowing down point into the third part of the S's, which is turn five. You have to check up your speed here for sure. Really good place if you're standing out there to see who's really on it and who's not. Some can take the speed really far into that left hander, and some will just bleed that speed off early and then carry speed out of it. Could be, you know, swings and roundabouts on benefits there. Just depends on how your car is. But you have to keep some really good control on the exit for sure, so you can set your car up for the entry to turn six. So turn six is a long, long late apex. It's a long turn. The goal is here is to take as much speed, but still be able to get back to the right, so you can you're not really compromising your entry into turn seven. So you take the speed in. You can't gain a lot by the exit speed, so which is why you, as I said, you overextend yourself on the entry there. But you definitely need to keep in mind you've got to get back over somewhat to the right, probably not all the way to the right, to set up for the next left-hander, which is turn seven. All right, so turn seven, some sacrifice more, some less for the turn in. You got to evaluate just kind of the swings and roundabouts thing, the gains and losses on your entry versus exit speed. The corners do come up in quick succession, so really maximizing your exit speed, not as important as trying to get the flow through these next series of turns, which come up in very quick succession. After turn seven, you come immediately into the right-hander. It's another one where there's a lot of variation on angle of approach between people. I did notice over the years that Nico goes a bit wider than most to get a better angle for turn nine, and others kind of go in just a little shallower and check their speed up in the middle of the corner to make sure they do get to the correct turning point. So after that right-hander, you're setting yourselves up for turn nine. All right, turn nine, fourth gear, 160 kilometers an hour. There's a tricky crest to it, and the road falls away on the exit. So throttle and rear stability are very important. You can really, if you get any instability there and you have to check up your speed or have to catch a slide, you're really going to pay that penalty, because basically after turn nine, you're flat out all the way down to the hairpin 11. So you've got to make it clean, but it is very, as I said, very tricky because of that crest to actually put that throttle down early. But that's ultimately what your goal is. Then after turn nine, you're heading into the flat out turn 10. So as I said, turn 10 flat out and dry at least. The road falls away again, so you do have to pay attention. It's a blind turn, which makes it pretty hard, but it's super, super fast. So you want to be very, very accurate. On the exit of turn 10, you're going to be crossing that DRS detection zone. So you want to make sure you're close to the guy ahead if you can, or try and get away from the guy behind you if you can. But DRS detection zone, which you're going to feel and kick into as you exit our next turn, which is turn 11. All right, so turn 11, you want to brake as late as possibly can. You are straight, you're headed downhill, so the braking point is elongated just a little bit compared to one where we're actually heading uphill and the hill's helping you in that braking force. But the goal is the same at the apex, to try and get that car turned and rotated to allow for an early throttle, because you're heading onto the longest straight of the track. Once again, into a DRS zone. So get it clean, get it rotated early. You got to have faith and comfort in your car to be able to do that properly. And if you do get that comfortable in the car, then that's going to really help you with lowering that lap time. All right, so you've waited the years that seem to go by as you're heading down that back straight. Maybe not in a Formula One car, but most ordinary cars. It's a very, very long straight, obviously, to the hardest braking point that we mentioned before of the circuit. You brake as late as you can. Once again, it's a really wide entry, so it allows for some passing attempts. Obviously, it's DRS kind of helps you there. Most of those DRS passes are actually done before you even get to the braking zone, unfortunately. But you've got to be careful of the up and under that braking for a or just purely making a really big mistake because you're coming down from such a massive speed down to such a slow speed. Very easy to get that just that little bit wrong and undo all the good work that you've done. It does narrow up a bit on the exit. So with the high speed approach, you've got to get the entry speed right, as I said before. But the narrowing of the exit extremely compared to the entry really makes it tough to judge that right. So as we come out of that turn, we're heading all the way to turn 13. All right, turn 13, a right-hander, 100 kilometers an hour. You're in second gear at this point, kind of an awkward turn. Really promotes understeer, which is everyone's favorite thing to watch when they're in the stadium section. It's really an inducer of understeer. Really turning in for the apex for 14 is what you're doing at 13 because it's one smooth maneuver, which is why you don't really get down to that inside curb on the right because you're really setting yourself up for a better exit and line past 14. So speaking of 14, as long as you get 13 correct the turning point, there's nothing but acceleration in this zone as you're driving past the apex. But now you're really getting your car pointed and set up for turn 15, which is that tight left-hander. And you want to get, obviously, a good point so you can brake as late as possible. There is a passing attempt on if your opposition leaves the door open, so just be ready for that. But it can be a little problematic, and it's very hard to make a really decisive move there. You've got to kind of play nice on the exit between the two of you to really make sure you don't take each other out. So coming into that tight 15, second gear, 85 kilometers an hour. Some stay a little wider on the approach to lessen the angle of turning. But if I was in this Formula One race, I'd always try to drive straight in and brake as late as possible and figure out how to rotate that car nice and swiftly without using too much steering angle. Just like as we talked about with turn 1 and with turn 11, momentum is really important. However, because if someone does get a wheel inside you, they can push you out on the approach to 16. You don't want to let that happen. So you don't want to stifle all your exit speed either. If they're behind you, you're trying to force that driver ahead to run wide and even get on the outside if need be. It can happen if you can get just alongside enough. And as I said, still place. If you're going to make a pass, everyone's going to kind of have to play nice. And now we're approaching the big, the triple simulating to a some degree, anyway, that big long turn at Istanbul. All right, so turns 16, 17, 18, we'll kind of treat these as one, three rights in a row, sixth gear, about 200 kilometers an hour, but you're always kind of gaining the speed very quickly after that two-thirds of the way around there. You're always really... Everything has to do with your initial setup for that turn. As the other car turns are coming up so quickly that anything you do there is really going to have a knock-on effect. You don't want to have to adjust your speed or your line mid-corner any more than you have to. So definitely that initial turning point and setup is massive. But your goal here when you turn in for 16 is to be able to get as full throttle on the exit as early as possible as you exit 18, heading down to a very short speed straight away and into part through a DRS detection zone into turn 19. So turn 19 is fourth gear, 180 kilometers an hour. Your approach speed is massive coming out of those triple right-handers, and you have to bleed more speed off than you really want to. The initial sight picture looks really inviting, but the road falls away quickly from you. So your entry speed has to be just a little bit subdued than ultimately you'd want or think was probable. You have some nice runoff if need be on the outside, but you've got to beware because once that car starts to bounce, you may not be able to get that rear end back under control. So watch out for that. You have to kind of ride it out and straighten the wheel if you do go over those curbs, and some drive it, but then the road ends and grass begins very quickly, so you still have to be fairly swift with getting it back to the left, but just a little too swiftly will actually send the car into a spin while it's still kind of bouncing out there in no man's land. So once we come out of there, we're heading all the way to our last turn, which is turn 20. All right, so turn 20, another left-hander, really second gear turn, 90 kilometers an hour. There's a bunch of second gear turns on this track, which kind of leads to a lower average lap time, but not that really concerns me or anything. It's all about clean exit here, obviously. Due to 19 not really allowing cars to run close behind on the exit, and 20 not being too much slower, really. So there's not obviously a long braking zone to go along with that. It's not the ideal passing spot. You just need to be squeaky clean and to not pay the price of a bad exit all the way up the hill. But then again, this is going into a DRS zone, which will allow a pass to happen anyway. So maybe it doesn't really matter. Sad face emoji. There you go. So that is a lap of Austin. Once again, sorry, me and Todd can't be there. We'd really love to be there, but hopefully we can gather something together and some support next year so we can make it back out there, because really, really love this, the town of Austin. Love Texas food in general, really. But the track is a phenomenal place to go, and there's several places on the track to go watch that will... You can really see the guys at work. I say turn one's kind of popular. You can kind of see a little bit there, but I wouldn't hang out there too long. Definitely the midpoint of the S's all the way up through to turn 10 is a place where you can really differentiate between the drivers of what they're doing, how their cars are handling, etc. So have a good weekend, everybody, if you're there or if you're watching. And we will see you on Monday for the race review.
Racing.